everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and Chris has the weekend off. And I have a very special guest, though, so we're going to miss you, Chris, but we've got someone who is going to talk to us today about a very important topic that impacts every single one of you that is listening today. So if you are having some trouble with sleep, or you want to know more about sleep, this is going to be a very informative show. My guest today is Dr. Tony Panettiere. He is a neurologist and a sleep medicine physician at the National Intrepid Center of Excellence at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. That is a mouthful, Dr. Panettiere.
Indeed.
He's a retired Navy captain, so we want to all thank him for his 25 years of service on active duty. Your service included a tour as the Navy Surgeon General Specialty Leader for Neurology and was involved in the establishment of the Sleep Laboratory at Naval Medical Center in Portsmouth, Virginia. So welcome, Dr. Panettiere.
Thank you.
I'm going to get even a little bit more about you. I'm going to talk about a little bit about your background, bachelor's degree of science from Shippenburg University, and then attended medical school, of course, at the Uniformed Service University of Health Sciences, which is the military medical school. And he got his doctor of medicine degree there. And then after completing his internship in family practice at Jacksonville Naval Hospital, he then received flight surgery certification in Pensacola, Florida, serving as a flight surgeon at Naval Test Center in Pax River, Maryland. And then after serving with the U.S. Marine Combat Forces in Operation Desert Shield and Storm, he then completed a neurology residency at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda. He then later completed a sleep medicine and epilepsy fellowship at Duke University Medical Center. So go Blue Devils, right?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's a lot of credentials, yeah. Just to say this person knows a lot about sleep. And I think more importantly, he's a good friend. He's husband to his lovely wife, Nancy, who we just adore. And he's the father to three daughters and his dog, Louie, who is friends with my dog, Zoe. They're both mini black poodles, right?
That's right.
And he loves the Lord. So we're really grateful to have Dr. Panettiere talk to us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's just start from the very beginning, because we're talking about sleep, and there's been a lot in the news about sleep. But why is sleep so important?
Well, we think of sleep, as most people do, which is overarching all of your well-being. And so your mood, your levels of pain, your memory are all affected by how well you sleep. We had a lot of ideas about why people slept from an academic standpoint. Sleep medicine's been out since the 1970s or so, but not till 2013 was there a study that sort of elucidated this a little bit better, where it was discovered that in sleep and only in sleep, the brain becomes very porous to the spinal fluid, the brain fluid that's floating around it, protecting it. But that fluid is able to penetrate the brain and clear away the metabolic waste products that accumulate during a day of thinking and activity. So in doing so, the waste products that build up particularly are also elevated when people have Alzheimer's disease, and it slows neural network of function in the brain, where one part of the brain, of course, communicates with another part. That slowing will cause people to not think as well or not remember as well, lose the precision of thought. So a full night of sleep particularly is important for your memory, but obviously for your well-being, as anyone knows who's irritable from a lack of sleep.
Yeah, so. We did a show on sleep and relationships. So we talked about the impact of no sleep, which is to be irritable and agitated and
absolutely
make mistakes, not be on your top of your game. Right. So what I'm hearing from that is the brain is sort of like cleaning out.
Yes.
During the night, and like the body's rebooting.
The brain has no lymphatic system, unlike the rest of the brain, and that's how it kind of cleans itself.
So a lot of people that might be listening will be taking, they're in school, maybe they're in college, maybe they're taking an adult class or whatever. And we talk a lot with med students about how important it is to get a good night's sleep for that reason. So do students do the absolute wrong thing by trying to stay up all night and cram for a test?
Yeah, I think that would be true. It's the sense of urgency that you misplanned a little bit and you have more to study than you expected.
Time management.
Time management, absolutely. Yeah. The best performance has been found when people can get a full 7 to 8 hours of sleep prior to their test.
Okay, so talk about that a little bit in terms of the number of hours that people need.
Well, first of all, when you do a sleep study on someone, you look at cycles of sleep. And so there's parts of the night where you're in light sleep, deep sleep, dreaming. And the cycles average about 90 minutes long, and an adult needs about 5 a night. So that 5 times 90 minutes would be about 7.5 hours.
Oh.
So that's why we sort of target that. Some people are cycles a little longer than 90 minutes, some a little shorter, and that's why you can have variability where maybe 7 hours is enough for somebody and other people need 9 or 10.
And what about children? Be different for children?
So yeah, really young children need probably 13 to 14, and then they usually split their sleep in two cycles with a long night of sleep and then obviously a nap, and that usually goes away by the time they're, you know, in kindergarten or so, the need for a nap, and they usually can have it all in one setting at night.
So I'm thinking of a lot of parents who work and they get home late, and then that's the only time that they might have time with their children.
Right.
And then kids are staying up till 10, 11 o'clock at night and then getting up early for school.
Right.
You're saying this could really affect the child's performance.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And also affects then the parents' well-being because they haven't had any downtime themselves, mm-hmm. maybe to talk to their spouse, to close the day down, to relax a little bit. And so I usually recommend that children, depending on their age, roughly be, especially young children, be in bed around 7 or 8 and get into a habit of doing that. Get the lights dimmed in the house so they have a perception of the sun's going down. But they be regularly woken up around the same time during the week. So that helps set their clock and circadian rhythm to allow them to be able to fall asleep early enough in the night. And then that gives the parents a few hours to themselves, clean up and talk to each other and relax.
So that routine, is that really important in sleep in terms of somewhat the same time every night, somewhat waking up the same time every day? Just say a little bit more about why that's important.
So evolutionarily, the body wants to be awake and light and asleep and dark. Obviously, sometimes jobs prevent that from mm-hmm. being done. People never feel as well, especially when they alternate between day shifts and night shifts. But physiologically, they're going to function the best if they can maintain that. So the only part of the sleep cycle you control is waking up. You don't control falling asleep. I can never make somebody fall asleep, and they can't either. So if they wake up about the same time, then they'll tend to habitually fall asleep around the same time, give or take how much activity their day was like. And that's the part that I target, is waking up about the same time. On weekends, I might slide it an hour or two from their mm-hmm. typical wake up, because they're usually busier and more active typically during the week, might do yard work and more housework, and that'll burn off some of that energy. A lot of times people normally get up at 6 a.m., get up at noon. That throws their clock off by 6 hours. So if they're in Maryland during the week, they're in Hawaii during the weekends, and then they try to restart that on the back on the weekday, and it makes it very hard to reacclimate.
So before we take a break, you mentioned REM sleep. So people hear about REM sleep all the time. So tell them what that is and why that's important.
In REM sleep, is the part of the sleep cycle that's terminated is when you'll dream. When we're in the sleep lab, we can tell that brain activity becomes very fast then, as though you're awake. Your eyes start looking around. We have sensors by your eyes, and your chin tone drops down. So that's when you're at the most relaxed. And in a normal setting, your body would actually be paralyzed, so you can't act out the dream.
Oh, wow.
Some people can't do that. They have a medical problem that prevents that, and they can be very active and restless at that phase of the night. We're not exactly sure what all phases of sleep do, but it seems like REM sleep is a time the brain sort of clips and strengthens certain memories and deletes others and helps you to recall it better. So that part of sleep is very important to have.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to take a brief break, but when we come back, I want to talk about insomnia. We have so many listeners who are struggling with just what you said. Maybe I can wake up okay in the morning, but I have a lot of trouble falling asleep. So stay with us on the Dr. Linda Mental Show with our special guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere. More on the importance of sleep after the break.
Dr. Linda, one of our listeners asked this question. Sometimes I'm so overcome with worry and anxiety that I think I'm losing my mind. Seems I've tried everything from drugs to meditation. Why doesn't anything work?
Well, I'm so sorry that your life seems so unmanageable and overwhelming. Too often, though, it does seem nearly impossible to live in peace and contentment because of all the craziness in our world. Did you know that God's plan for handling worry is so simple and yet so perfect that you can begin using it today? Did you know that starting right now, you can begin to cultivate a worry-free life? These aren't pie-in-the-sky promises. They're God's prescription for you to thrive and to soar past your anxiety and worries. Try this. The next time you begin to feel overwhelmed by life's pressures and worry clouds your mind with negative thoughts and depression, say what King David prayed. The Lord is my strength and my shield. Remind yourself that my heart trusts in Him and I am helped. I have so much more good news for you. I hope you'll find it in my book, Letting Go of Worry.
Thanks, Dr. Linda. Now that's great advice. You can find God's plan for your peace and contentment in Dr. Linda's book, Letting Go of Worry. It's available wherever you buy your books online.
Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Today's topic is the importance of sleep. And if you've ever been sleep deprived, you know how important sleep is. And we've got so much more to talk about. But before we get back into the importance of sleep, I want to remind you to check out my website, drlindamental.com. And there you'll find my blogs and my books, and you can connect hopefully with me on social media. And remember, you can listen to this podcast and other podcasts anytime on iTunes. We are portable. People can take us with them, Dr. Panettiere, so they can be running and getting exercise and listening to you talk to them about the importance of sleep.
All right. That's a good idea.
So Chris had the day off, and we're talking with our special guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere, in case you just joined us. He is a board-certified neurologist and sleep medicine doc. He's a member of the American Academy of Neurology and the American Association of Sleep Medicine and the American Medical Association. In addition to his clinical work, he has co-authored several posters on sleep and traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder. He's given a lot of lectures on the topic of sleep disturbance in traumatic brain disorder and PTSD, headache assessment in PTSD and TBI, and how to make your medical presentation memorable. We're not going to talk about that. He's just going to help me on the side. All right, so let's get back into the importance of sleep, obviously. You gave some of the benefits of sleep in terms of learning and memory and the body. I'm assuming we didn't even talk about it helps with your weight. Sleep and weight
Absolutely.
Are connected,
Definitely.
Right?
Yep.
There's a lot of other benefits that we could go into. But what happens when people are sleep deprived?
Well, when people are sleep deprived, they, again, tend to have deficits in their memory, their mood, their pain levels will tend to be worse. And I always tell people that even if you have running a sleep debt, there are ways to make it up. The best way to do that would be to still get up the same time every morning. But when you get home, say from work, say it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, if you feel like you might take a nap at that point and you know you are tired and you maybe didn't sleep well, particularly the night before, that you should actually just draw the blinds. Don't do anything to get too woken up again, like engage with the family too much, and just actually go to bed. Because many times, in a normal night, you need 5 sleep cycles, which I mentioned earlier was 5 times 90 minutes is 7.5 hours. So, but that night you might need 7 to sort of wake up feeling refreshed. And if people come home and feel like they take a nap and don't, they'll get sort of a second wind. And then if they delay their sleep to their normal bedtime of 9 or 10 or 11, then even if they sleep soundly for 7.5 or 8 hours, they may still feel tired in the morning. Hmm. As though, like, why is that? I slept 7.5, 8 hours, like he said. And it's because they didn't make up for the deficit from the prior night or nights. So usually a few nights of getting back to a normal routine of listening to your body. Don't fight to sleep if you can, and take advantage of the fact that when you feel sleepy, that's your best chance to go to bed and fall right asleep.
I've read that if you take a nap more than 20 minutes, it's detrimental. Is that a myth or is that
no,
true?
No, usually 20 or 30 minutes. If it's more than that, it's going to tend to rob from the night, make it harder to fall asleep.
Okay.
So power naps for some people work beautifully. And I'm not necessarily anti-nap, but if somebody needs naps on a pretty regular basis, that means either not sleeping long enough, they may have an undiagnosed sleep disorder that mm-hmm. they haven't... they're not aware of yet. It's more symptomatic of something else to me than the actual fact that they're taking a nap.
What is insomnia, and why do so many people have trouble falling asleep? I know that you can have trouble falling asleep. You can wake up in the middle of the night,
right.
or you can wake up early.
Right.
So why is that happening to people, and what's the root of all of that?
The problem with insomnia is that it prevents you from getting either continual sleep through the night or enough of it. So you're insufficient or you have broken up sleep. Part of that is that life pushes us to the right, as I say. So instead of you being able to fall asleep at 10, maybe you're taking care of your children, you're doing schoolwork, you're finally sitting down to talk to your wife, and you're like, well, that's important too. And that tends to make it 10:30, then 11, and later. And yet there's work at the same time asking you to get up and come in. Sleep always ends up getting squeezed in that scenario, since work is going to be a hard start, you feel like you can flex the going to sleep mm-hmm. part. And because of that, we don't have any buffer. We're 100 miles an hour. We finally get down nice and quiet in the bedroom, and the brain is not yet ready to fall asleep yet. The body might feel tired, but the brain's not ready. And so I tell people, you always have to gain alignment with those two things before you actually get to the bed. And that's why I use the family room and the living room as a place where you sit quietly and you have a little buffer time for maybe half an hour or so just to close the day down so that there is a transition that's easier for your body and brain as you go into the bedroom.
So what about the person who has a lot of racing thoughts in their mind and that's what's keeping them awake? Is there something they can do at that moment to calm down those thoughts?
There is. I like people to have what's called a golden hour before they go to bed at night. And they'll sit down in the family room or living room by themselves with a dim light, not a device, and they'll start to write, kind of have a sleep journal, and just kind of write the thoughts in that are on their mind, feel how they're feeling, and just put them in a notebook. It helps them remember that stuff the next day, but also parks the thoughts for the night. 10 or 15 minutes doing that or so, you're not trying to figure it out. You're just making note as the thoughts go by. And then I have people do light reading at that point. So things that aren't job or college related, they're just sort of general interest, maybe a novel or a book you're reading. And you just read the book until you start falling asleep on the book. And at that point, you would have already showered, brushed your teeth. You're just waiting to get sleepy in the living room. I never align sleep with the bed partner. So you've had different days, maybe bed partner's tired earlier or later. So it's nice to go to bed together, but it's not always possible. And so I disconnect those things and have people just go to bed when they feel like they're sleepy.
I like the idea of parking your thoughts. That's a great phrase, because I know sometimes when I have a really difficult time sleeping through the night, I'll wake up because my mind is going on a whole bunch of ideas that I have. Mm-hmm. So I'll go and take a notebook and I'll just write those ideas down and then leave them. Because if I don't, I wake up the next morning, I thought, I know I had a good idea that night.
That's
and I
right.
don't remember what it was.
Absolutely.
So it right. helps me get back to sleep when I do that.
Right. And I tell people to keep the notebook on their nightstand. So if something pops in their head that they forgot, rather than have to think it through and ruminate mm-hmm. on it, write in a book, close
right
the book.
What are your thoughts about all these sleep aids and taking a benzodiazepine or taking something like Ambien over the counter? What are your thoughts about that for sleep?
I think the best sleep you can have is natural sleep, kind of the way you slept when you were 15 years old. You just went to bed. There are times and occasions to maybe use Ambien if somebody has acute insomnia, as almost everybody in their life will at some point have insomnia over a stressful episode. Child's in the hospital or my parent just died. The purpose of a medical evaluation with a sleep expert is to try to get to the why. Why are you not sleeping? Because mm-hmm. I can always knock somebody out with a sleeping pill, but let's try to dig into that and figure out why that's happening. And then let's treat that part. And so if it turns out that they have poor sleep hygiene or they are not closing the day down or they're working out right before they go to bed, those kind of things can tend to raise their adrenaline levels and make it hard to fall asleep.
A number of physicians will recommend, they'll prescribe them trazodone for sleep or some type of sleep medication. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a good idea?
Sometimes for an acute treatment, it might be helpful. But most of the time, I think that you run the risk of somebody becoming addicted to it, at mm-hmm. least psychologically, because it's kind of easy. Yeah, it knocks me out. I don't have to deal with all the reasons why I'm not sleeping. And that's, again, what really takes the work to figure that part out. So I often tell people that if you don't want to be on this for many months or mm-hmm. the rest of your life, we got to try to figure that out now before this gets too ingrained and try to get to why you're not sleeping well.
I don't think a lot of people realize that benzodiazepines are addictive. You build a tolerance. You need more sometimes to get the same effect. And then also a lot of people will drink alcohol and be taking those drugs as well. So what's right. the danger in that?
Right. When you drink alcohol, it does tend to help you to fall asleep. It helps you relax. But as you metabolize the alcohol out of your system, it tends to cause your sleep to become fragmented. You tend to wake up much more easier. You're less likely to sleep soundly through the night. You're less likely to feel rested. I don't necessarily tell people they can't drink, but I don't tell them to drink to help them to sleep.
Right. So it's kind of a misnomer that it puts you asleep, but it doesn't always give you the best sleep and sometimes will
That's
wake
right.
you up.
That's correct.
All right. Well, we've got a lot more to cover. I feel like we're not going to have enough time for this because there's so many questions we could ask about sleep. But stay with us. We'll give you some very specific helps on the other end of the show. So some sleep hygiene that people can engage in. I might ask you a few other lifestyle questions about sleep. More on the Dr. Linda Minchell Show after the break. Well, the other day I was cut off the road by a driver. Everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out," but I restrained myself. knowing that yelling at the driver would not do much good. And really, it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. You know, anger easily rises up in most of us. And while anger is a natural emotion, we need to deal with it the right way. So it's not wrong to be angry, but how you deal with your anger is what counts. The Bible tells us, be angry, but do not sin. So what is the biblical way to handle anger? This is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. This small book has sold over 130,000 copies. It's because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry, but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches us. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com. That's drlindamental.com, and also available online where books are sold.
Did you know you have a conflict style? Everybody does. Are you a conflict avoider? Maybe you don't avoid, but instead react intensely. Or perhaps you are a great negotiator. Dr. Linda Mental offers a free conflict quiz when you visit her website, www.drlindahelps.com. Click on the picture of her latest book, We Need to Talk. Then have a friend or your partner take the quiz too, and see if you can navigate conflict successfully.
You're listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, and Chris is off this weekend. We have a very special guest, though. Sorry, Chris, I'm talking to another doctor, Dr. Tony Panettiere, who is a sleep expert, and we're talking about the importance of sleep in this episode. Now, we did have a fun episode, Tony, where we talked about sleep and its impact on relationships. One of the interesting things was we looked at how close you sleep to somebody. There's actually a range that's really optimal. It's really fun. It was a really funny show. So if you're interested in how it affects your relationship, check that show out on our podcast on iTunes. You can listen to that anytime. But we're going to go into some of the environmental effects now with sleep. Like, what role does the environment play when you're trying to get yourself into a good position for sleep?
The environment is huge. Most people often ask me, what mattress should I buy? Mm. And that is very preferential. Obviously, sometimes if you have back pain, a firmer is a little better. I don't particularly, you know, make any recommendations of that because it really depends what somebody's overall medical well-being is, what their needs are for comfort. And so that's why you'll often have to cycle through different beds sometimes, try them out for the obligatory 100 nights or something, and then figure out what you like.
So it does matter. The mattress does make a difference.
Matters a lot, yes.
Okay.
So, and then how hot the mattress keeps somebody, because generally you want to sleep a little cooler at night because you'll sleep a little more soundly, you'll fall asleep easier. Hot environments are very hard to fall asleep in for just about everybody. The ideal temperature in the bedroom might be around 68, 70, and then have some covers on top that you can warm yourself up on. So that seems to be the ideal place for most people in terms of the temperature.
If you're my age, you have to have it about 50 because you're going to get hot during
the night. All right, okay, maybe
pushing off those covers.
Yes,
yeah.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. And then in terms of the size of the bed, you want to have it at least large enough so that if you're a particularly fragile sleeper where you tend to wake up at night for various reasons, you want to have at least enough distance between you and your bed partner. Many times the two people in the bed have different thermal requirements, and there are beds now that obviously can control the temperature for that, but you want to have at least enough space between you so you're not too affected by the either the movements or the temperature of the person next to you.
It's so funny because Norm used to be the one that I would cuddle up to, and I would be freezing during the night when we first got married, and so I'd be, you know, so close because I was always cold. Now, in this stage of life, I'm always hot, I'm far away, I'm taking the covers and throwing them off, and he doesn't know where they are during the night, so we laugh a lot about how this changes with age.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then in terms of, like, it's TVs in the room and things, some people can fall asleep with a TV. We generally dissuade that.
Yeah. I can. I can. It can be on, and I fall right asleep.
You can. But what I always tell people is if you can't do that and you're having problems sleeping, then I have to eliminate some variables. And if they do have a TV in there, I have them not use it. A lot of times the person with the sleep problem is next to a person who can watch TV and fall asleep. So I have to have like a little discussion about have them negotiate that. Either they go off to a guest room and try to sleep without a TV on, or their spouse agrees to not have the TV on in the bedroom.
Now, the TV in our bedroom is way far away too. Doesn't that make a difference? Are we still getting the screen light, the effect of screen light?
That is correct. You still are, plus the noise.
Okay, so talk to the teenagers that might be listening about their cell phones and the light with their phones trying to go to sleep at night.
The cell phone can obviously put out light. And the whole idea on light is that, as I mentioned earlier, you want to be awake in light and asleep in dark. And so the light from a phone or a TV is a blue light, and it tends to suppress melatonin. Your alertness period is about 16 hours. So if you got up at 6, the clock runs out around 10 at night. But around 14 hours after you wake up, melatonin is released by the brain to help promote sleep. It takes a couple hours to work, and that's going right into your bloodstream. So you hope that the clock running out at 10 collides with the peak effect of melatonin released at 8. And so if someone's targeting 10 o'clock bedtime, it helps them fall asleep pretty easily. The light from various things like the phone will tend to suppress melatonin, delay your ability to fall asleep. So at the very least, when people have to check their phone because they might have gotten a text and they're not sure how important it is, I have them put the blue light filter on that most phones have now. And that'll cast a yellow U to the screen. I have it scheduled, like, come on about 8 o'clock at night, shut off at 6, but you can make it whatever. That helps them, if they do check it, to not have a negative impact on their sleep.
I didn't even know there was that feature on my phone. So there's a, what is it called? The blue light filter?
Yeah. Night shift is what iPhone calls it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I didn't know what that was. I've seen it on my phone, but I didn't know that.
Right.
What about the people who can drink caffeine right before they go to sleep? I just do not understand that.
Some can, but usually caffeine, because it has a long half-life, most people drink it in the morning, but many times I'll see somebody in the afternoon who's drinking coffee, and it's because they're not sleeping well at night, and that gets them through their afternoon at work. Caffeine's effect can be 12 hours after your last cup, so it can make it very hard to fall asleep at night, and that's why sometimes people resort to alcohol to be the downer after an upper of caffeine to get through. If caffeine's ingested, I usually like to know they've done drinking it by 10 a.m. in the morning, so it's sort of out of your system at night. But yes, some people can drink caffeine at night and fall asleep, but most people can't.
30 seconds on exercise right before bed. Good or bad?
Yeah, it's bad.
Okay.
Yeah, so you want to at least be done working out at least 2 hours before your desired bedtime. Ideally, I think working out in the morning's the best, kind of wakes you up, gets your day going. Next best would be maybe lunch, and the least short of working out before bedtime would be right after work, say 4 to 6 in the evening.
Which is when most of us who work have the time to work out.
Right.
So, well, listen, we have exhausted our time, and we hardly have gotten to half the questions that I had on this show. So much we could do. We haven't talked about sleepwalking or night terrors or restless leg. I was going to ask you all about that, but I do want to mention to our listeners that there are several scriptures in the Bible about sleep. One of them is, "I lay down and slept. I woke up, for the Lord sustained me." Another from Matthew is, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Rest is talked about in the Bible over and over. That to say that rest is important, sleep is important, it's mentioned in the Bible. We know that sleep is something that is very helpful for our health in all aspects that we've been talking about. Hopefully, all of these things that Dr. Panettiere has told us today will help you. A few tips that you can take away. Maybe try a few of these things with the sleep environment, looking at your lifestyle, how that's affecting your sleep. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you, Dr. Panettiere, so much for coming in and talking to us. Many thanks to our producer, Norm Mintel, our engineer, Chris Weigel, and my special guest today, Dr. Tony Panettiere, who made the show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
Doing life together.
Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.